This is Jerry Pippin. It's been about a week now for the Extraterrestrial Civilization and World Peace Conference, sponsored by Exopolitics and Dr. Michael Sala. And we have Dr. Michael Sala on the line from the Big Island, and we're going to talk to him about it. He had about a week to reflect about it all now. So I think we'll start the interview by saying aloha. How are you, Michael?
Aloha, Jerry. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, it's our pleasure. When did you first come up with this idea?
Well, I guess it was several months after a conference in June of 2005 that was held here on the Big Island. The convener was Joan Ocean, who's a good friend of mine, and she hosted that conference. It was on dolphins and extraterrestrial civilizations, and she, after the conference, it was very successful, and she said that even though she enjoyed the event and having all those speakers talk about dolphins and ETs, that she wasn't going to organize another one. And so I thought, well, here's an opportunity to maybe do something concerning ETs here on the Big Island. So I got the idea of doing a conference on extraterrestrial civilizations and world peace. So it really began around August, September of last year, when the decision was made and we began to basically promote it, and that's where it all began.
You actually had quite a good attendance, I thought. I don't know if you got about what you wanted, or I know we can always want more.
Yes, I guess as an organizer, you're always wanting to get more than what time. But, you know, we had around 150, so that's a good enough for a Big Island, because we need to remember this is in the middle of the Pacific, and it's very expensive for people to get out here. And so unless you have something that focuses on the theme of dolphins, then it's hard to kind of motivate the local community. So it was a good-sized crowd, and so it was enough to get people talking and get people networking and discussing, and of course it helped in moving forward in that document that eventually emerged out of the conference.
Yeah, let's talk about the Hawaii document, the Hawaii Declaration. Was this the original idea when you decided to put the conference together? Did you want to come up with something like this, or did this just sort of evolve?
Well, it did evolve. I mean, originally it was going to be a conference, but because in the past I've worked in hosting conferences when I was an academic, and in those conferences we typically had a document that emerged through the conference. So I was quite used to the idea of actually combining a conference with some working document. And so with this conference, it was no different. So that once I had committed to the conference, I then thought about working on a document that would get the conference participants agreeing around a set of principles that would be the basis for establishing peaceful relations with extraterrestrial civilizations.
Well, I know when the conference started, you were doing what is natural in Hawaii. You had the Hawaiian chants and the lays put on people and things like that. But certainly the subject matter became a little unusual pretty fast. I mean, your opening statements were very interesting. What were you trying to lay out there?
Well, basically what I was trying to do was to establish that we have so much evidence that extraterrestrials are visiting our planet, that the data is pretty persuasive, and while people might kind of pick and choose over what data is most persuasive and might grumble over this piece of data or whether this whistleblower is 100% accurate in everything he or she shares, or whether this contactee is accurate, or whether this witness and experiencer. But when you look at the whole bundle of data, I mean, what we have are kind of many thousands of witnesses, contactees, whistleblowers, who all talk about a very similar phenomena. And so what we need to do is look at the policy implications. That, for me, is really critical here, that we need to go beyond the question of are they real, are they really visiting us, to looking at the policy questions of what is the government doing, how are they doing it, why are they doing it, and, you know, what are the extraterrestrials doing in response. And so these are the policy questions, and so this is really where we get into the whole idea of coming up with principles for establishing peaceful relations with extraterrestrials and come up with the idea of citizen diplomacy with extraterrestrials. How can we as private citizens make a difference when it comes to extraterrestrials visiting our planet?
The Maelstrom thing I want to get into with the missiles and the nuclear war here in a little bit, but I just wanted to get into one thing about it while I'm thinking about it. Captain Robert Salas, who is that? That's not you.
Captain Robert Salas, he worked at Maelstrom Air Force Base back in 1967. He was someone that was in charge of the nuclear Minuteman missiles that were on the base. There were 10 per base, and he was on duty the day that a UFO was seen hovering over the base, and where approximately seven or eight of these nuclear Minuteman missiles were deactivated. And so these Minuteman missiles were deactivated because of a UFO presence. And what was interesting was that he says that after the Strategic Air Command began an investigation, as you would imagine, because this was a very significant national security issue, that the whole thing was quickly hushed up. He was told, and many others who witnessed or were involved in this sighting and the events afterwards, were told to basically keep this secret, not to divulge it to anyone else, and so it basically remained secret for years. And it was only much later that Robert Salas put the pieces together that this was not an isolated event, that it happened in other nuclear Minuteman facilities nearby in Montana, and so he then decided to come forward and become a disclosure witness.
Now, is he related to you, or is it just a coincidence?
No, his second name is different to mine.
Okay. Okay, I was just curious about that, because I looked up on the Maelstrom website today just out of curiosity, because I knew he was there at your conference, and they have an interesting name for their unit there, the 341st Space Wing. I wonder why they named it that.
That's interesting. I mean, I'm not sure whether you have the Space Command having a unit there. I mean, that's what it would suggest. But I imagine because they had nuclear missile stations at Maelstrom, it must be a very high-tech facility. So perhaps possibly it's been attached to be part of the Space Command, or perhaps the missiles have a function that has to do with them targeting possible objects in space. I'm just guessing there.
Well, now, I understand that, and the reason I'm even bringing this topic up is you're no stranger to Washington, D.C., and the thought patterns going on there. It seems to me, and maybe I'm misreading this, but it seems to me there's a whole group in the Defense Department, and maybe even in the administration that's in charge right now, that are sending out signals about, yeah, we can take on the ETs in a warlike manner. Do you get that impression?
Definitely. I think that's basically what many of us who have been following the recent Pentagon statements concerning deploying weapons in space are concerned about, that there's a whole new generation of weapons that are now coming online that could be used against extraterrestrial vehicles. And here we're talking about directed energy weapon systems. These are weapon systems that basically operate near the speed of light, so it wouldn't be like a ballistic missile where, I mean, extraterrestrial vehicles, by all accounts, seem to move very quickly, so a ballistic missile wouldn't be much of a threat to them, but a directed energy weapon would, because here you have something that moves at the speed of light. We're talking something that would travel from the surface of the Earth to the upper atmosphere, say 100 miles or more, within a second. So there you have the capacity for using weapons against extraterrestrial vehicles that come into our atmosphere.
You want basically to have a citizen initiative, if I understand this correctly.
That's right. I mean, I think what we need to understand is that this whole phenomena, the UFO and extraterrestrial phenomenon, has been secretly managed by covert agencies for well over 50 years now. decisions have been made, agreements even have been reached with some of these visitors over what they can and can't do and on what technologies are exchanged, what information is given and so forth. And I think many people kind of would accept that that probably has been happening. Now, what really is important to understand is that private citizens have a role to play, that when it comes to diplomatic relations, that just as private citizens have a role to play in international diplomacy, which has been happening for several decades now, you also have that opportunity for private citizens to get involved in extraterrestrial affairs.
So you're urging everyone, regardless of their station in life and where they are, to go over there and sign that petition, which we have a link to on our website. You have one on your website as well to it. Is that correct?
Exactly. That's a citizen diplomacy initiative, because what it does is it basically represents the collective aspiration or agreement of a large number of people about what they would like done in terms of interacting with extraterrestrial visitors. So if you have enough people agreeing to this document, well, then you have a citizen diplomacy initiative, because it sends a signal. It sends a signal not only to government agencies who are monitoring these events, but more importantly, it sends a signal to extraterrestrial visitors who look at what it is that private citizens are doing and factor that into their own behaviour. And that's very important. Because up until now, most of humanity has been silent, and we've let the covert government agencies run the show. But if enough people start taking action and agreeing, I mean, this is the key here, they need to agree. If they agree, well, I think that can have an impact on the way in which the whole
Now, you have a special website, I think, for this conference, exopoliticsinstitute.org/conference.
The easiest, well, and that is one, the easiest one is etworldpeace.com.
Is there any evidence that anyone in that group of the 150 people, and you had some real heavy hitters in the political world, Paul Hager for one, an ambassador for another, anybody make contact with extraterrestrials that you know of? You've been in this exopolitical arena for at least 5 or 6 years.
I mean, in terms of the declaration, not yet.
Okay.
As you know, you got to watch out for these media people. I'm trying to figure out if there's something going on I don't know about. basically, you just feel it's time to get prepared. Is that it?
Well, we definitely need to start working together to reach agreement, because so many people are aware of this phenomenon, but there are so many disagreements and personality struggles. And so if you get people to agree over a common set of principles, then you make some progress, because then that becomes a platform for doing other things, like moving forward in getting, say, local city councils to pass a resolution in support of establishing peaceful relations with extraterrestrial civilizations, and so you can get the local community to pass these things. So this is part of the process, and I think this is the way in which disclosure may eventually happen, if grassroots communities start to work together around a common set of principles that everyone can embrace and have these passed by their local communities and town councils and just take it from there. I mean, this is the way in which you often have some profound policy shifts happening.
You know, Dr. Sala, we get all kinds of pressure groups from the right, from the left, from wherever, on any issue at any time. And one of the interesting things I've noted to hear since you became very high profile with this conference coming up and then holding it, and the fact we were going to cover it, was we get things from people on the right, definitely in the military-industrial complex, who write as if peace is the furthest thing from what they want, which I never have quite understood. They always kind of try to come up with false issues, and one of the false issues I noted in the last couple of days people keep asking and wanting me to ask you is, well, how does Dr. Sala think he can negotiate with extraterrestrial civilizations? And I don't necessarily think that's what you're
Well,
saying.
the way citizen diplomacy operates is that people who are private citizens become involved in, say, international conflicts, and they perform a role in either communicating between different parties in the conflict, helping the dialogue move forward, or coming up with ways in which a conflict can be resolved.
When you talk about that, Ireland comes to mind, and you had somebody who was very instrumental in the peace process in Ireland attend your conference.
We're talking about Ambassador McCullough.
Yes, uh-huh.
Yes, so yeah, there's an example, and he's been involved in many international conflicts working as a citizen diplomat. That is someone who doesn't occupy any government position, and they go in and basically they perform kind of a goodwill function, help dialogue move forward, help the communication channels open up, and carry the positions of each side to one another, because often when there is a conflict you have the communications coming to a standstill. And so there's no difference when it comes to the extraterrestrial presence, because once one starts to dig into what is in fact happening, one concludes that there are many deep underlying conflicts in this whole field. I mean, you have different government factions competing against each other. You have different factions having very different views over how disclosures should proceed. You have different extraterrestrial groups apparently reaching agreements, some being within the architecture, the agreement framework established as covert government agencies, other groups outside of it. So you have a really complex picture. So by offering this function of citizen diplomacy, what I can do and what others can do in support of these sorts of initiatives is to help present some alternative ways of moving forward and resolving these conflicts. And the biggest conflict here is disclosure.
Yeah, it's interesting that you had a wide range of people attending the conference. They weren't all peaceniks. You had, and I don't want to get into any names here, but I know some of the background of some of the people there, and they're quite militaristic in the past. But they've come forward there, basically, I assume, to maybe try to meet somewhere in the middle.
Well, that's the key, Jerry. It's really meeting in the middle. I mean, you know, once you start pointing fingers and looking at different parties and saying, well, they did this or did that when they were in the military or were involved in this particular policy, then what we do is we cut people off. And the thing is, you know, this very complex problem is going to be resolved if we can come together and reach agreements in how to move forward. And that will involve people in the military. I mean, whether we like it or not, the military are not going to just going to disappear from the scene. I mean, they still believe that they have legitimate national security concerns, and we have to deal with them, and we need to look at, well, how can we combine their legitimate national security concerns with our very legitimate civil rights and our concerns about being able to have open contact and dialogue with extraterrestrial visitors, and if this is something that is a natural right.
You had a chance, I know, to visit with the Honorable Paul Hellyer some, and really get a measure of the man. Tell me a little bit about the Hellyer situation. What's your impression about him?
Well, he really is a jewel to the whole UFO exopolitical community. I mean, here you have a very senior Canadian statesman who's come forward and basically said that this phenomenon is real. He has staked his credentials to it, saying that this is something that cannot be ignored. It has enormous policy implications. He's come forward in support of various initiatives. He was in support of the initiative to have exopolitics discussed at the Canadian Senate, and he's now behind this Hawaii Declaration. He was one of those that was in support of that. So what you have here is a senior politician who has staked his credibility on the reality of the extraterrestrial phenomenon and on these issues having enormous policy implications. And he's very important, and he's very articulate. He is very clear in what are the key issues here, and he is someone that is going to be a resource for all of us who want to make progress in persuading others on how serious these issues are, especially when it comes to the space weapons issue, because this is not going to go away. the US military are proceeding full steam ahead, deploying advanced space weapons in space, and they want to have as much budget as they can for that particular project. And we need to respond to that. We need to say, well, look, this is going too far, and we need to kind of curtail those types of activities. So he's very important for that effort.
Well, if we're armed to the teeth, the logic tells us, or at least it tells me, that there could be a scenario of a real accident here, starting hostilities when none were intended. In other words, an extraterrestrial mission to Earth is misread by the military. Defensive motions are taking place, and God knows what will happen next. And so you're right. We need to be very careful about space.
I mean, I think we can't assume that that hasn't already happened, that extraterrestrial vehicles haven't been targeted by government agencies or the military. I think there is some concern that this has been ongoing, and certainly some whistleblowers have said that this, in fact, has occurred. And I'm thinking of one, Clifford Stone, who did come up with his testimony that this has been ongoing, and he's got a very solid military background.
Yeah, yes, he does. And we'll be visiting with Clifford Stone in Roswell in a couple
of
weeks.
Wonderful. I think he's very important, and he'll certainly shed a little bit of light on that whole phenomenon of extraterrestrial vehicles being actively targeted.
And I think we alluded a little earlier to Joan Ocean. She was there with her dolphins, is that right?
Yeah, she did a presentation on the dolphins and the ET connection there. I mean, she has, with along many others who work with the dolphins, a lot of anecdotal evidence that dolphins do interact with ETs.
Oh, really?
About that, yes.
No, I know that they seem to have a language of their own, don't you think?
Well, definitely. I mean, they have brain capacities that we barely understand. Their brain is slightly larger than the human brain, and they utilize more of the brain than we do. Their communication patterns occupy a much higher vibratory level than we do. Like their sonic communication uses frequencies that we can't hear, so we really don't know how much they are communicating through the sonic. But I mean, their speech patterns, their sonic abilities are incredible, and they also apparently have telepathic abilities too. So this is very, very significant if they are interacting with extraterrestrials, as researchers such as Joan Ocean and a few others argue they are.
So basically, the dolphins may have been getting a lot out of this conference, more than we know. It's possible. You know, we talked about the military, but I have a hunch that a lot of this military intervention is really corporate intervention of the military-industrial complex. For instance, I can't prove it, but I really feel in my own heart that Area 51 was not really a military operation. It was a corporate operation for the military, with and I had, you know, done a lot of research into this, and appears to me that there's some corporate people that were maybe in charge instead of some of the people everybody says was in charge. The reason I bring this up is that James Gillen was there, and he's been having things happen up there in Washington State with Boeing officials. Did he get into that?
He talked about the visitors up there and how he's had a number of people from various corporations come up to see what was going on, and certainly he talked about how seriously these visitors took the whole phenomenon that was being captured up there on tape. So certainly those officials, corporate officials, and also he's talking about military craft shadowing UFOs that were up there and monitoring the activities that were occurring up there. So the whole military corporate sector is very interested in what's happening up at Mount Adams with James Gilliland. But yeah, I think you're right that the military industrial complex is closely intertwined. Those corporations that fulfill military contracts are very tightly integrated with the military. And I think this is deliberate because obviously once you have money being given to corporations to spend on military projects, Congress has no oversight as to how the corporation
are actually doing it. You're right. And in other words, money There's a heck of a lot more than just paying for research. And we'll leave it at that as far as that goes. When we talk about the human awareness of extraterrestrials, what's your feeling about all of this? I mean, just the title of your conference, Extraterrestrial Beings and Things Like That, in the title, do you think people's eyes glaze over, or are they more accepting of this now that there are probably civilizations elsewhere?
Well, that's a very interesting question, Jerry. One of the things that we were very pleased about was we made up a very large 8-foot by 4-foot banner, and we were very pleased that the hotel agreed to put it right up in front of the hotel. I thought that was really quite revealing. I remember last year when we first began talking to the hotel about doing some events there concerning extraterrestrials, it was like they were talking in whispers about this. So it was almost like it was something that it was something you just couldn't say out up front, that this was kind of outside of the norm. But the conference last year, Dolphins and Extraterrestrial Civilizations, kind of opened up a crack. And so when we began to talk with the hotel, they were quite happy with us moving forward with the banner. Once they saw the quality of the banner, it was a very good quality banner, and we put that up, and they were thrilled by that. And what was important was that it meant that, you know, tens of thousands of visitors to Kailua Kona would walk past, because Kailua Kona is the tourist hub of...
Yeah, right. In the Big Island itself is kind of the in place now. I understand. A lot of people when they go to Hawaii, they don't feel they've seen Hawaii if they don't get to the Big Island.
So tens of thousands of people would have walked past, seen the banner, and they would look at the title of the banner and said, "Oh, extraterrestrial civilizations and world peace." And so I think, you know, this is a process of getting people kind of used to the idea that it's actually okay to talk about extraterrestrial civilizations and to see, well, what does this mean in terms of world peace? I think it's important, and that's part of the transition. We are helping open up human awareness to these possibilities and get them to take it seriously. And that's how I think long-term change will happen, as we get people to kind of move beyond that ridicule phase and start to kind of seriously engage with these ideas.
You know, visiting with Paula Harris off the record, who covered this for us, she says that Angelica Whitecliffe is really a real force behind all of this, and nobody ever mentions her, so I thought we should. You got anything you want to say about her?
She was the co-organizer of the conference, and she did a great job in making the conference happen. And she also is a very gifted telepathic communicator herself, so she has had some very interesting information that she's been able to relay concerning extraterrestrials.
Now, does she do channeling or just get messages, or how does it work?
She just does the telepathic communication. Okay. Through the channeling. She feels that the channeling is a very passive process, whereas telepathic communication is a much more active process for the communicator. And I think it really does raise this question of, well, how do we deal with information that comes to us from extraterrestrials that is telepathic in nature? And she kind of discusses that. She's very skilled at that. And she's also just very recently took up a position as a director for the Extrapolitics Institute. So we're very happy about that, because now she'll play a more prominent role in how the institute evolves, and we'll be doing more events. And she's very skilled, has talent in that area of organizing major events.
Well, Dr. Sala, you're bringing up a couple of things I want to get to before we end the program here, and that was basically what's next for this organization. What are you going to be doing next?
Well, we're going to be really promoting the declaration. We're going to try to get a grassroots campaign going to get people alerted to what the declaration is trying to do and get people discussing it. So we're going to go around and we're going to do a grassroots campaign here on the Big Island and other islands here in the Hawaiian chain, and basically get people excited about this and see if we can get some local council resolutions passed in support of the declaration. And so that would be quite an accomplishment. We're also looking at organising future events. Certainly We're already planning and thinking about having 2007 extraterrestrial civilizations and world peace 2007, and so we will be moving ahead with that. So in due course, we'll have something up on the website. And of course, the Institute is always looking for ways in which it can be more prominent in helping promote awareness. So we are looking at a journal, an exopolitics journal that has been coming out, so we'll put out articles on that. And of course, any funders, anyone that's willing to fund the Exopolitics Institute, we're always looking for benefactors, sponsors, or members, and so they can find out about that by going to the Exopolitics Institute website and seeing if they can fund that and support us as we put forward these events, which are quite energy intensive and financially intensive. So anyone that's willing to support that, we'd be very
appreciative. When we talked to some of the people over there, Dr. Alfred Weber, for instance, he's more into, I guess, official channels. Hopefully, he thinks he's going to be able to, if I understood him correctly, he's going to try to bring something to the UN. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think Alfred's work complements what we're doing very well, and we can complement Alfred. I mean, Alfred is wanting to work at that high level of getting the UN General Assembly to pass a resolution in support of a ban on the weaponization of space. Also get the UN to support a resolution that would encourage a decade of contact where the general public is educated, and he's doing similar things with the US Congress, so, and the Canadian Senate. So he's working at that level of government, and I think he certainly should be supported as much as possible.
Okay, if I were an extraterrestrial out flying near Earth and I wanted to come here and make contact, there just seems to be many choices, and it seems that if we had more of a United Nations approach to it, that might be the way, or maybe just landing there in your backyard in Hawaii.
Well, this is going to be the real dilemma here, because, I mean, there is some truth to the fact that we already have been officially contacted, and public officials, whether we're talking about major governments, US, Britain, Russia, China, or whether we're talking about the UN, are aware of contact having been made. But this information has been deliberately withheld. So if the governments of the world are not going to be forthcoming, well, the next step, of course, are private citizens. And so I think it's only natural that we in the private sector or civil society are going to experience more communications and contact with extraterrestrials, because if governments aren't going to announce the truth, well, then why not civil society? We have the internet and we can get the truth out there pretty quick. So this is something I think that will happen, and certainly something we'll be putting any energy into. And we hope that eventually we'll be able to get an ET coming to our conference. So that would be a wonderful gift.
You let me know. I'll be there. thank you very much, Dr. Sala. Any closing thoughts or comments?
Well, thank you for having Paula come and cover the conference. I think it's so important to have people in the media such as yourself supporting these issues, because without that support we really just wouldn't get the message out. So I really am thankful for your courage in getting this information out, covering the conference and really making it possible for many thousands of others to know what's really happening.
We play no favorites here, or try not to, and basically you know, one side gets the ideas about we're doing certain things for certain reasons, and that's really not true. We're only doing one thing, and it's trying to educate the public and get the truth out and have interesting and informative shows. And I think it all walks hand in hand with what you're trying to do, and that's educate the public.
We're all working together in this area. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Sala. Bye. Aloha, right? That's what we got to say.
Yes, that's great. Thank you, Jeff.